First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Jacksonville firefighters lose a federal lawsuit over how they groom themselves on the job. Good morning. We are live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, today's the first day of Black History Month. Here's a question as we start February. How are American workplaces handling issues related to black hair? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a preview of this weekend's Jacksonville Film Festival. Another good news and notes for your Wednesday. Getting you through hump day, as we do every week. It's all ahead, but first this morning, black firefighters who sued the city over a common skin problem have lost their case. Now, the firefighters went to court back in 2020, and they argued the fire department was wrongly burdening them by requiring them to be clean shaven. They said that was a burden because they have a condition called pseudofolliculitis barbae, or PFB. Now, for some black men who are required to shave, this can create ingrown hairs, irritated skin, and scarring. 30 local black firefighters sued and asked to be allowed to wear close-trimmed beards on the job so that they could avoid PFB. But a federal judge said no. And it turns out these types of issues involving black hair and workplace standards are nothing new. Today, on the first day of Black History Month, we're having a closer discussion of black hair and the workplace. Dr. Kimberly Allen, Executive Director of 90 Forward, joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions about black hair on the job? Have you had issues with how you wear your hair at work? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook always open as well. So, Dr. Allen, what was your reaction to the outcome of this lawsuit?
It was definitely a little disturbing because black hair in the workplace is not a new concept that you know is being talked about, but it is certainly one that is contentious, particularly for black people. We have been relaxing our hair, wearing wigs. We have been shaving, our faces and doing all of these things that have now come out as being really harmful to our bodies in order to be accepted in the workplace.
Right. These firefighters said that in order to be suitable to go be firefighters on the job and be clean shaven, that caused a skin condition that a lot of people might not have heard about. Pseudofolliculitis barbae. Can you share a little bit about that? I know you're not a doctor. I'm not either. But this is something that is a thing. It's a real thing.
It is a real thing. And I talk about it at length, with my husband, who for a long time used to shave his facial hair, and it just was not good for his skin. And so growing it out, keeping it, like they said, a low shave is much better for his skin. Mm-hmm. I've seen the it can become infected. And it's really nasty and it's irritating too. To have to deal with. I mean, it's similar in the ways that we don't like to deal with acne and those things, except for thinking about inflammation and scarring and just all around irritation on your skin.
Now, the federal judge argued that if he allowed the black firefighters in Jacksonville over at JFRD to do this, they would be violating rules of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. He said that a trimmed beard standard would not be a reasonable accommodation. But what was interesting to learn is that Jacksonville is just one of many cities around the country where firefighters are litigating this very issue. It's not just a Jacksonville issue.
No. And the question I always have when we refer back to a lot of these, federal rules and laws is, is it being upheld because this is the way it's always been done? Or, is it now time for us to look at this and say, well, this isn't really necessary. Maybe a low shave still accomplishes the goal without having to go, you know, the extra mile of, you know, shaving everything off. And then my other question is it genuinely a safety concern? You know, have we tested the equipment to see if a low shaven beard is going to interfere with its, you know, ability to protect the firefighters in the line of duty?
And going beyond JFRD, this, as you said, is a big issue for Black Americans at work in so many contexts. One recent example that actually made news that comes to mind for me is over at our news partner, Channel 4, News for Jax, anchor Melanie Lawson Minor started wearing her hair naturally on camera after many years of having to wear a wig or straighten her hair. For Black women having to conform to white European beauty standards at work and grooming standards, this has been a big problem in many contexts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, and I'll go on a personal example here. When I was graduating from graduate school and I was looking for roles as a professor, I was interviewing at an institution in the Midwest. And during my interview process, someone asked me, because I was 5 weeks postpartum, had just had my second child, and so my hair was braided. Mm-hmm. And I contemplated whether or not I would do the interview with my hair braided or not. And I decided to keep with it just because, you know, caring for a small child, you don't have time to worry about your hair. But during my interview process, someone asked me, so where will you go get your hair done here? Because we don't have folks here who can do the kind of styles that you have, which why would we even be talking about that during an interview?
Right. And there have been lawsuits over wearing braids at work, wearing locks at work. That's been common. I think back to a few years ago when a news anchor on E! News was talking about Zendaya, who's a big star, and she was wearing locks, her hair in locks on the red carpet. And this anchor said she looks like she smells of patchouli and weed. And it became a huge controversy. Mm-hmm. Because the implication was somehow that locks are not okay.
Right. The way that our hair grows is not okay, and it's not professional, when in reality, we've been wearing our hair in these styles for centuries. And it is because we have been trying to conform and be accepted that we've done a lot of the wigs and the relaxers and the other styles that are deemed acceptable. But I think we're in a time right now where folks are really embracing the natural. We got the Crown Act that was passed last year that some states have adopted and some cities have adopted as well, to say, you know, it is perfectly professional to wear your hair the way that it grows.
Let's talk briefly about the Crown Act and what that legislation will do.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain?
Absolutely. It prevents people from being discriminated against because of their hair, wearing their hair in a natural state. And that passed, I believe, March of last year. Not all 50 states have adopted it. I think about 13 states maybe have adopted it so far.
And Florida has not.
Has not. And not surprisingly, right. But it and I think about 30 cities have actually adopted it. But it's out there. And I think it would be great if we did adopt it.
Our guest this morning, Dr. Kimberly Allen, CEO of 90 Forward. It's Black History Month. What are your questions about black hair and the workplace? What are your stories? Give us a call, 549-2937. Charisse on the South Side. Hello, Charisse. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Great. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I have more of a comment, and this has actually happened to me in my workplace. A few years back, when I was working for a Fortune 500 company, I was already hired. I was doing a job, and, you know, I was always getting accolades, and I've had some comments from some of my white coworkers about my hair. One of them said to me, I wear my hair natural. Let me just say that first. I wear my hair natural in its natural state, where it's kinky, curly. And sometimes I'll do like a twist or something to kind of just make it lay a little flatter. But it's Florida. It's humid. Mm-hmm. It gets big. So one of my coworkers said, look, I stuck my hand in the socket. And my other coworker took up for me and said, that wasn't a nice thing to say. And I'm like, yeah, why would you say something like that? And, you know, he conceded and said, oh, you know, I was just joking. But, you know, I know in all jokes, there's some reality to it, you know, thinking that it was something funny, but it wasn't. I mean, initially I hurt my feelings. And I said, you know, I don't care. I know I look nice. and I look presentable. And that was, you know, something that was their insecurity. I guess they were putting off on me is where I took it. But I mean, it's something very common. It happens a lot in the workplace. And I didn't even realize Florida did not pass the Crown Act. So that is something to, I don't know, do a little more research on my part to see if there's something that can be a change for that.
Yeah, Charisse, thanks. Thanks for sharing your story. And when it comes to this, you know, Dr. Allen, this is common. I mean, this the lines are jammed, by the way. I knew they would be. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I hear stories like that. My director of equity, we have a podcast called Business of Race, and we talk about the Crown Act, and she talks about her experience with an employer telling her that her hair was intimidating. And she said, well, you know, is my hair going to jump off of my head, you know, and fight you? But, you know, these are the things that people say.
What it comes down to, it seems to me, is just that people of color, Black professionals, are being asked to significantly modify their natural appearance for the comfort of their white colleagues. Is that a good way to put this?
Yeah, that is exactly right. It is to be, it is a Eurocentric standard of beauty, a standard of acceptance that is present in a lot of cultures in America, and a lot of corporate culture in
Mary in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Mary. Good morning to you.
Hi, Melissa. My daughter, Laura, is a journalism professor at the University of South Carolina, and her friend and colleague, Sonia Douay, was slated to be the dean of the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism in Arizona. And some of her students, upon finding this out, came forward and said that her comments to them for the news business, you know, to be in the news business, were racist about their hair. And so she did not get that job, one of those prestigious jobs you could possibly get, but this came forward. Then she said, well, she was only trying to advise them the best she could about getting jobs and furthering their careers. But in any case, I don't think it's been resolved yet. Mm. There's another lawsuit going on, but this, just mentioning, because this is at the highest level of the journalism profession to which you belong.
I don't know if I'm at the highest level, but thanks for promoting me, Mary. And thank you for calling. But yeah, so these things are happening all over the country, Dr. Allen, it sounds like.
Yes, we are not exempt by any means here in Northeast Florida, and the culture is certainly not just here.
Devin in Arlington. Hi, Devin. What's your story? Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? I was born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida, but I lived up in Philadelphia. And I started growing dreads because up north, dreads are considered, education-wise. But I was working at a restaurant called Chart House, and it was a big issue because when you started growing dreads, you have to have twists. And I had to have a formal meeting with the area general manager. It was a big scene because they refused me. I was waiting tables at the time at college. And they refused to let me work because they thought it was my hair, the twist of my hair, would then promote their image of Chart House. But eventually, long story said and short, after about a month of negotiating, I was allowed to wear my hair. And the general manager got transferred to another restaurant because they, I guess the organization felt that I was being discriminated.
Hmm.
But even down here in Jacksonville, dreads, I mean, dreads are, they're looked on, I don't want to say racial or anything like that, but I feel that dreads are looked on, they're not, well, like I say, up north, they're looked on as education-wise or spirituality-wise, but down here in Jacksonville, it might be like criminal-wise or something like that. I just wanted to use that a comment. But, so, I mean, I agree with the doctor. We should be promoting our culture and everything. And this has been for thousands of years. And now that we're trying to promote our culture, it seems like it's an issue. And I just wanted to make that a comment.
Yeah, Devin, thanks for that. Thanks for telling us about your experience. People calling in from all over to share some stories. Hank on the north side. Good morning, Hank.
Good morning. Melissa, I can identify with the African-American man because I used to have a problem with a lot of shave bumps in the past, but as time went by, I started using the Gillette Skin Guard and different African-American bump-free products, and that helped my skin a lot. So there are different products that would help the skin if, you know, if that's the case, and if they have to shave, you know, according to the policies, you know, that's what probably it's going to take, a preventative to help them from not breaking out in those razor bumps.
Thank you, Hank. I'm sure there are products out there, and I'm not super familiar with how effective they might be, Dr. Allen.
Yeah, there are definitely products out there, and you know, given the ruling, right, young men are going to have to decide, young African-American men with facial hair, they're going to have to decide if this is a profession for them, because this is now, you know, sort of set the precedence for what's going to at least happen over the next probably decade or so. It's going to be enforced. Mm-hmm. They need to make sure that it's upfront and explicit in trainings and things like that. But there's going to need to be a strong sort of, here are some recommendations for products to help you avoid incurring those skin conditions. It might involve talking to some dermatologists, et cetera. But given that this is the ruling, it is what it is. And if I could, Melissa, I just wanted to say, you know, the gentleman on one of the calls talked about, you know, people wearing locks for their life. There are folks who cannot shave their hair because of religious and cultural reasons. And if they have the desire to serve, you know, to protect and serve in this way, mm-hmm. they are now, you know, not able to do that and still be in compliance, be in alignment with their faith and their culture. And so, you know, I get that the ruling has happened, but what are we saying that this is now an exclusionary club at this point?
We have an email, one listener pointing out the beards might make it difficult for the firefighters to seal their air mask properly. I would have to read through the lawsuit more fully, but I believe that's why they asked for the accommodation of a very close trimmed mm-hmm. beard so that they could still wear their masks.
Correct. Correct. And that a close beard versus clean shaven, right? It's still not going skin to skin contact with the razor, which would still prevent that. But again, have we tested that? Can we test that to see if it would still allow it? My I don't know this, but perhaps they haven't tested it already and they don't know for sure.
On Facebook, Lisa says, straightening black hair is emerging as having possible dangerous health impacts. Having to meet standards based on meeting white expectations can be a risk for people. Why should they have to do that? She says.
Absolutely.
Relaxants, chemicals in the hair, they're not good for you.
No, they are. There's a lot of lawsuits out right now linking hair straightening products to reproductive issues in black women. And so this is not just a matter of, you know, just straightening, or even if you straighten it mm-hmm. without chemicals, you risk damaging your hair. Like all of these things are, you know, and then smothering your hair with wigs and not letting your hair get air, you risk alopecia. Mm. And so it really has a lot of detrimental effects for us.
Mandy tweets the show, about 5 years ago, some branches of the U.S. military rolled back restrictions on black hair standards. Each branch has different standards, so it's not one exact rule across the board. So depending on where you serve, you may or may not be asked to conform to these standards.
That's right.
All right. 549-2937, Kevin on the West Side. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
What's your story, Kevin?
So I'm a nurse at the Navy base in the ER, and we see sailors all the time that have what we call no-shave chits. It's basically a doctor's note stating that he has that medical condition where he can't shave because it causes problems. The question remains to be is, are the firemen going to get a decent seal with their masks? Because the firefighting equipment has progressed so much more than it used to be, you know, ages ago. Remember the movie Backdraft, mm-hmm. The firefighting movie? And the dad was shown and he had this huge mustache. And then the son was shown and there was no facial hair because he was using the more current equipment. It is challenging. A shout out to black women. I love your hair. Your hair is amazing. Don't let anybody tell you anything else. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. That's interesting. Thanks for sharing your insights over on the Navy base. Malik in St. John's. Hey, Malik, good morning to you. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to make the comment that recently there was a federal decision that allowed Sikhs to wear their beard and turban while being enlisted in the military. And I'm also a former retired soldier. I am also a Muslim, and I requested to wear my beard in because of my religious practices, and it was approved. And I had no problem with going through a gas chamber with my mask. I had no problem with safety and security. And I'm wondering, why is it that the federal government, on one hand, makes a ruling for religious purposes, but they can't seem to make a ruling to allow a beard for medical purposes?
That's an interesting question, Malik. Thanks for that.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I was coming from with there are people for a variety of reasons, religious, cultural, that cannot shave their beards or their hair for that matter. Mm-hmm. And are we effectively saying that those people then cannot serve in our first responders? And that is a hard sell for me to say that. We have to test it out. We have to be willing to at least try it out before we just, you know, throw it out.
It's interesting, too, that he notes that there seems to be a stronger legal precedent for protecting religious rights as opposed to accommodating medical conditions. That says a lot about America, don't you think? You know? John on the South Side. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, when I was in the Coast Guard in the early 90s, there were a couple African-American petty officers on my cutter, which is the ship we were on. This was in Kodiak, Alaska. And they were allowed to wear not just, you know, tightly shaved beards, but full beards pretty much, but they were still kept neat. But, and, you know, that was no issue. They just had, you know, they had to get the chip from the doctor, like the previous caller had mentioned. And it wasn't an issue. And that's, you know, the military, with federal government. So I don't understand what the issue is. And we had to wear the mask too for, you know, firefighting drills and all that. So I just wanted to bring that up. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's conflicting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah. I think it gets back to what, someone else just pointed out on Twitter, depending on where you're working, there's no one uniform standard.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know if they're going to appeal, and take it to a higher, court to, mm-hmm. because inciting some of these, the military and, you know, mm-hmm. examples, the religious examples, can we see that just trickle down?
Wells on the South Side. Go ahead, Wells.
Good morning, Melissa and Kimberly. I have that condition myself, and I've been wearing a beard for probably 40 years or more.
Hmm.
I think some of this, you know, also has to do with the mentality of the government. You know, we're still dealing with settler colonialism in this country. And, you know, we could go back to what they did to Native Americans, you know, by putting them in schools and cutting their hair and stopping them from speaking their language. So this kind of goes a little deeper than just the hair. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, like back in the 60s, when African Americans started wearing their hair natural, it was a phenomenon that white people started to try and emulate. And then there was this tremendous backlash. And I just wanted to throw some of those things out into the conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, this goes pretty deep. It's not just about the Jacksonville firefighters by any means. But as we pointed out earlier, these matters are being litigated all over the country. For example, in Washington, D.C., firefighters have sued over this. They say they were removed from duty and reassigned to lesser roles and got their pay docked because they refused to shave after the D.C. Fire and EMS Department issued a policy in 2020 prohibiting most kinds of facial hair. And so this is just a thing all over the country, and it's one that we're going to continue to grapple with. But Dr. Allen, you know, if you could share a little bit about how your organization, 90Forward, works to educate people about not just this issue, but a lot of issues involving race.
Yeah. So in general, we try to always keep the conversation front and center about race and its impact. And Wells, it's good to hear you. You're absolutely right. These are not new tactics. This is certainly much deeper. And so in this space, we have our Center for Corporate and Community Equity, which is led by Regina Newkirk Rucci on our team, our director of equity, where she is working with businesses and organizations to help them unpack their policies that might be reinforcing things that are not necessarily in line with their values and might unintentionally or in some cases intentionally be marginalizing people of color in the workplace. And we talk a lot about that on the Business of Race podcast. We do that in our consulting work. And then generally speaking, we host race cards conversations across the community to make sure it's front and center.
When you say race cards, you actually give people decks of cards
that
have talking points on them. It's a play on the phrase, you're playing
the race
card.
That's right.
So, yeah. Now, you mentioned equity. This is a little off topic, and we'll talk about this more on Friday. Yesterday, the governor announced that he's going to defund DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion classes in Florida universities. This is coming, just as you say, corporate America is leaning in to DEI and making that more a part of the workplace. So what's your reaction to that news?
It is truly disheartening to think that the institutions where our young adults should be learning how to think critically, how to be exposed, you know, they're exposed to different people from different backgrounds. And we're saying that we need to deprioritize that in exchange for political, you know, play. It's disheartening. And it is honestly what we have been seeing. It is the through line of, I think, Governor DeSantis's run of just sort of breaking down public education from K to 12 up to higher education. If it's in his purview and his budget, he is really dismantling it in the way that we know it.
Of course, the governor's supporters would disagree with that. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you giving your view. Let's take one more call. Keith in Tampa. Hi, Keith.
Hello.
Go ahead, Keith.
Yes, I just had a comment and interjection with the black men shaving problem.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I've been using a product now for over 35 years. I used to have that same problem when I shaved with razor bump. It is a product that was actually specifically designed by a black dermatologist. It's called PFB. It's a black design shaver with a specially designed blade that actually helps prevent that problem with black shaving, you know, razor bumps. And they have a whole line of products called Bump Fighter is the name of the product line. And this particular shaver, like I said, was designed actually by a black dermatologist. And I've been using it for over 35 years now, and I had that problem, and it has drastically stopped that issue that I used to have also.
All right.
So I just wanted to put that out there because a lot of black men actually don't know about that product. I have introduced it to a lot of men over the years that didn't even know about it. So I used to find them in Walmarts, but now I get mine off Amazon. I find them now on Amazon. So I just wanted to put
that
out.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Keith. Yeah, I hope that helps someone out there listening if they want to check it out. And Dr. Allen, they can follow you on social media too at 90Forward.
That's right. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook.
Dr. Kimberly Allen, CEO of 90Forward. Thanks for being with us today. Really interesting discussion.
Thank you, Melissa.
And much more still ahead. Later, a little good news that we'll serve up on our weekly Wednesday menu. But up next.
It's always very exciting to be able to watch these films and then to curate and pull this thing together. One of our goals at the festival is to become Oscar qualifying.
Lights, camera, action. A look ahead to this weekend's Jacksonville Film Festival. We'll be right back.
can fly in the breeze and get caught in the trees. Give a home for the fleas in my hair. A home for the fleas. A hive for the buzzing bees. A nest for birds. There ain't no words for the beauty, the splendor, the wonder of my hair.
We're going to the movies. Yes, the 2023 Jacksonville Film Festival takes over the urban core this weekend with three venues showing an exciting slate of independent films. One of the venues, our own WJCT Studios. I got a preview from the festival's artistic and programming director, Tim Driscoll. Take a listen. Hi, Tim. Good to be with you as we talk about the 2023 festival. And of course, WJCT is one of the three downtown venues. We're excited about that. Tell us about this year's event.
Yes. Well, yeah, first, excited to be on here to be able to talk about it. Yes, this year's event, we are moving out of San Marco and we'll be in downtown Jacksonville this year on February 3rd through the 5th. And the whole festival is sponsored by ViStar. So I just want to thank them. They've been a tremendous partner and sponsor with us. But this year, I mean, like a lot of our years, we have some tremendous content. And this year, we're actually adding a lot of workshops and panels, which is something we hadn't really had much of in prior years. So we have some terrific professional writers going to be coming in doing a writer's workshop. And then we have a lot of independent producers who will be in town talking about crowdsourcing and how to build a micro-budget feature films and micro-budget short films. So beyond just, you know, terrific things to watch, we have a lot of really great educational experiences as well.
So there are some great films on your schedule. Tell us about some of the films you've selected this year.
Yes, man, it's always very exciting to be able to watch these films and then to curate and pull this thing together. You know, one of our goals at the festival is to become Oscar qualifying. And to do that, we have to bring in, you know, these top-notch short films. And so we've been, you know, scouring other film festivals and what they have brought and found some really terrific international films. But one of the things we're really excited about that's going to be at your home, WJCT, on Friday, the opening night, is The Mirror Game. And we have the director in town for a Q&A afterwards. It's a beautiful film about two longtime friends, a guy and a girl, and they longtime friends, and they through this evening discover that their relationship could go to new places, but it's not exactly what you might think. I don't want to give too much away because I think you should come and see it. It's beautifully written. And again, the director William Stribling will be in town, and then on Sunday, I'm going to get the exact time for you. Sunday at 12:30, we'll be at the Jesse Lecture Hall, and you will be actually moderating the Q&A afterwards for a film called Undiagnosed. Which is a hard film, not going to lie. It's a documentary. It is a hard film. It is about undiagnosed diseases, primarily amongst children. But we're going to have the doctor and the director involved, Dr. Katia Moritz, who you'll be talking to afterwards, just about how important this subject is and why it's important we have people who are aware of it and who can advocate not just for the children but for changes to be made so that more research can be done so we don't have an undiagnosed problem amongst our young people in the States. So those are two films in particular that I'm really excited about that I think that are really powerful and really strong. But also Saturday night, we have some terrific, more genre-oriented stuff. I really encourage people, email us at info@jacksfilmfestival.com. Tell us what kind of things you like to watch, and I am happy to point you to what I think you might enjoy the most, because it can be scary to look over these things with films you've maybe never heard of or directors you're not familiar with. But I guarantee you there's a ton of content here that you will connect to and that you will enjoy, and I'm happy to guide you toward that if I know what you like. So please, info@jacksfilmfestival.com. I will personally email you back and tell you what I think you might enjoy if you tell me what kind of things you like to watch.
Sure. And I look forward to being part of the event on Sunday. And, you know, the film festival is great because you celebrate the independent film community that we have here. You're encouraging new generations of filmmakers, and you're celebrating the city's movie-making past, too.
Absolutely. That's one thing we're so excited about, being able to bring the festival back and then bring it back to downtown where it hasn't been for, you know, a good while. And to your point about, you know, celebrating in Jacksonville filmmakers, we have a whole block. Saturday, 4 o'clock at the library, we have a whole block dedicated to Jacksonville filmmakers. So if you want to see some local cinema, great place to go and check some stuff out. Storytelling is such a powerful thing because it crosses boundaries, it crosses borders, And it helps us realize that despite how much we might think we are different, we have a lot of things in common. And I think that's a beautiful, powerful thing. And I certainly, Jacksonville has a history of doing that kind of thing. And we're glad to be able to continue moving that forward into new decades and to bring along new generations.
Check it out at JacksonvilleFilmFestival.com. This weekend, downtown, Tim Driscoll, Artistic and Programming Director. I'll see you there. Thanks.
Well, we'll see you there. Thank you so much.
Well, here's a question. Do you have what it takes to survive on another planet? If you're curious to explore that possibility, you can do it at MOSH, the Museum of Science and History. They have a new exhibition called Planet Pioneers. Dr. Anthony Mortimer, Vice President of Education and Exhibits at MOSH, is here in studio with more. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. So this is sort of like us being able to be like Matt Damon in The Martian.
Absolutely. Although hopefully without the crisis.
Hopefully with no life-threatening problems.
But there are some direct references without mentioning that amazing book.
Really?
That was made into a movie. Because you do get a chance to, in one of the interactive components of the exhibit, to try to grow some potato plants.
Oh my gosh. So this is an exhibit that was brought to town by a science museum in Australia, and we're challenged to find out if we could survive off Earth. This is fascinating. How did MOSH get this?
Well, we typically plan our traveling exhibits 18 to 24 months in advance, and the main reason for that is so that we can schedule appropriate programming around them, and also so we get a crack at the best ones. So Planet Pioneers is a relatively new exhibit. We're only the third venue to have it. So it's very relevant with current research and current missions that NASA's conducting with Artemis 1. So the exhibit is created by Imagine Exhibitions, and SciTech, which was the company in Australia, is actually the fabrication partner. So what we have is an adventure, really, in an immersive environment. You walk through the airlock entrance and you feel like I am in an interstellar research station. So you walk through 17 different interactive components where you can pick your team, figure out how to get resources on the planet, what kind of shelter do I need? You launch a rocket. There's some gamified things like landing a supply rocket or piloting a drone. And the two most popular portions are the G-Force simulator, think the teacup ride, but enclosed.
Uh-huh.
And you can get a readout of the G-force that you've generated, and driving the Mars rover in an immersive augmented reality environment.
Oh, a VR setup. That's cool.
It's absolutely amazing.
I would think both kids and adults are loving the chance to do all this.
This is one of the things I love the most about this exhibit, and what we try to do with everything that we bring in is not only to have different levels of interaction, but a multi-generational appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So the information is primarily geared toward ages 5 to 12, because that's the predominant part of our demographic for our guests.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more in there for someone who wants to know more, anywhere from a space novice to a research expert who just wants to be able to have an opportunity to be involved in what NASA is actually doing right now.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, what's happening with Artemis is really going to have maybe real-world implications on future space exploration by human beings.
The most amazing thing right now, and one of the reasons I love my job so much, is somewhere in that exhibit is a young person enjoying the interactives in there who's someday going to do this for real.
Yeah, they're going into space.
That's what we want to do. We want to inspire that lifelong learning, and this is one of the ways that we do it.
So this is up and open at the MOSH Planet Pioneers, a fascinating interactive exhibit, and you have all of your regular core exhibits as well.
Correct.
And a few fun events coming up this month too.
Yes, indeed. It was so nice to hear Dr. Kimberly Allen on here this morning, a great friend of MOSH 904, is doing great work. We're working together on some exhibit updates. We also have an event coming up on the 24th, a new and growing partnership with the Jack's Melanin Market. It'll be an event titled Power, and it is a celebratory event celebrating Black art, culture, and history.
And that's inside the Mosh?
That's correct. And the week prior to that, we have our monthly popular program, Planetarium Night Live, as well.
Oh, you know what? If people have never been to your planetarium, they owe it to themselves to check it out. That is a lot of fun.
It is an unparalleled experience.
It is so great. And, you know, we were talking a minute before we went on the air. Mosh is still planning to move eventually across the river to the North Bank with a brand new and really impressive riverfront facility. That's still in the works, too.
Very exciting and on track.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit. We have a little more time than I thought. So tell us a little more about that.
Sure. So there is a lot of information out there. And if you want to keep up to date on where we are in that process, you can go to moshgenesis.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll give you the latest updates. You can see the renderings of the new building, what the new exhibitory inside is going to look like, designed by local projects. Absolutely amazing, immersive, interactive exhibitry. And we are very excited about the waterfront feature because there will be so much that we can do outdoors as well.
It's a huge leap forward for this museum, going from, which a nice facility, I'm not discounting where you are now, but to really a world-class facility and becoming part of what everyone hopes will be a revitalized downtown North Bank.
Absolutely. And you used exactly the phrase that we've focused on throughout this process is we love Mosh. Mosh has an amazing reputation with the Jacksonville and Northeast Florida community. And even beyond that, I had a huge school group yesterday that drove down from Glynn County, Georgia. But what we want to be is an anchor for that explosive growth in Jacksonville in a way that we can all be proud of and become a real destination. So world class mm-hmm. is the aim. And yes, we love our building too, but it's a 1968 version. And we're ready for new and ready for what the city wants and needs.
Time for an upgrade. Well, in the meantime though, visit themosh.org to check out Planet Pioneers. See if you could survive on Mars or another planet. It's probably a lot harder than you think. Dr. Anthony Mortimer, Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Museum of Science and History. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Up next, a free concert on the river this weekend. We'll tell you all about it and some other good news for your Wednesday. We'll be right back.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Join WJCT and ViStar for Teach 2023 on Saturday, February 25th, 2023 at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront in downtown Jacksonville. Tickets are available for $45. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
Next time on The World, residents of China are traveling again. In the Philippines, resorts and restaurants can't wait for this Chinese package tours.
They come in buses, in ships, in planes.
But some Filipino businesses remain cautious.
Because we don't know what virus again will arrive.
The promise of tourism dollars and concern over COVID. Filipinos consider the roaring return of Chinese tourists on the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robin Young. Mezzo-soprano Sasha Cooke asked 17 composers to write songs about the range of human experience during the pandemic. The resulting album, How Do I Find You, is up for a Grammy next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
The fight over how we teach history is once again in the news. Florida recently rejected a new AP course in African American history that's being piloted in high schools nationwide. How is this latest battle over America's past tied to efforts to win a culture war being waged in the present? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, St. John's Riverkeeper and JU's Marine Science Research Institute are hosting a free concert by the river this Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. at JU's Riverfront Amphitheater. The show features local band Snake Blood Remedy and gives you the opportunity to learn more about the efforts to reunite the Ocklawaha River, the St. John's, and Silver Springs. Jimmy Orth, Executive Director of the Riverkeeper, is on the line. Hey, Jimmy, tell us about the show.
Hey, Melissa. Yeah, we're really excited about this concert on Saturday. This is a part of an effort to obviously to show support for restoring the Ocklawaha River, which is one of the most important and the largest tributary of the St. John's. Unfortunately, there's been a dam across the Ocklawaha for over 50 years. We have joined with 60 other organizations throughout the state to try to finally breach the dam, restore the Ocklawaha, and ultimately restore the Great Florida Riverway, which is from flows from the Lake Apopka up to Silver Springs, Ocklawaha, out into the St. John's, and all the way up to the Atlantic Ocean. So this is on Saturday at JU's Riverfront Amphitheater, and we're doing this in partnership with JU's Marine Science Research Institute.
And sounds like a good band, too.
Oh, they're great. They play traditional and American folk music, so we're going to have a day of having a lot of fun, enjoying ourselves out on the banks of the St. John's River while also doing it for a good cause, showing support for restoring the Ocklawaha. So we're encouraging everybody to come out, bring your chairs, blankets, a cooler with some refreshment, and join us from 1 to 3 at JU. It's free. So come on out. We got a food truck there too, Twisting Roots, which has some great Southern Rican cuisine. And so it's going to be a fun afternoon of celebration, but also advocacy for helping protect our St. John's River and restoring the Ocklawaha.
Check it out, folks. It's free, a free concert on the JU campus right on the riverfront to support the St. John's Riverkeeper. Executive Director Jimmy Orr, thanks for the update. Have fun.
Absolutely. And then go to our website, stjohnsriverkeeper.org, to learn more on the events page. And there's actually three other events on the same day in support of the Ocklawaha.
All right. Thanks for that. Check that out, everyone. And it's Wednesday. So what else is good on our weekly menu? Well, let's start off with Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence. He was named to the 2023 Pro Bowl games, replacing Chiefs QB Patrick Mahomes. Lawrence is the 32nd Pro Bowler in franchise history, and he's the third quarterback in Jaguars franchise history, in team history to earn Pro Bowl honors, joining Mark Brunell and David Garrard. Check this out. The Veterans for Peace Golden Rule Project historic sailing vessel is stopping at cities all up and down the eastern seaboard. It's on a voyage to educate people about its cause to promote peace and abolish nuclear weapons. You can check the ship out tomorrow as it docks downtown at Riverfront Plaza. They're offering boat tours as well. Visit VFPGoldenRuleProject.org for more. We'll spread the love at February's first Wednesday Art Walk downtown tonight. The fun kicks off at 5 o'clock. Every month you get to do this, browse artwork, grab a bite from food trucks, enjoy live music, and new to the first Wednesday Art Walk lineup, Tonight, you can shop with minority-owned businesses and artists from the Melanin Market at the Breezeway at ViStar Tower. That's all downtown tonight at 5 o'clock. Here's a little shout-out to Jacksonville Dance Theater using the power of the human body as a canvas for storytelling. Join them for In Body, an intimate studio concert of short, small works that highlight how dance uses movement as language. Those performances are Saturday and Sunday at the Florida Ballet, Pacinich Bird Theater on Atlantic Boulevard. Well, the Super Bowl is just around the corner, and First Coast Blessings in a Backpack is bringing back the Soup, S-O-U-P, the Super Bowl after a three-year hiatus. This year, they have several dozen chefs presenting their signature soups, silent auction, VIP wine and whiskey tasting room, student-designed and decorated soup bowls, and more, along with special guest, celebrity chef David Madure. He has been involved for a long time in this, and the goal is to raise $50,000 to move nearly 400 local children into Blessings in a Backpack weekend nutrition programs. Finally, announcing the launch party for Lumen Repertory Theater of Greater Jacksonville, Northeast Florida's only professional equity-affiliated repertory company. The Lumen Rep Launch Party is going to be hosted in the Beer Hall at Intuition Aleworks downtown. They're going to have live music, pop-up performances, inaugural season details, drinks, food, and a whole lot of fun. Now, this isn't coming up till February 23rd at Intuition Aleworks, but get your tickets now at Eventbrite to support a new repertory theater coming to town. And if you've got a little good news you'd like us to add to our weekly Wednesday menu, just drop us a line. And thanks for listening. Thanks also to David Luckin, Heather Schatz, Brendan Rivers, Isabella Da Silva, and Michelle Corum. Email us anytime at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We love hearing from you. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening. Make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.